Welcome to The Digital Brew,
a podcast about making your business more awesome online.
I'm Angela, a copywriter, here with my husband Stu, a web designer.
It's time to pour yourself a cuppa and let's get started.
Hey, hey, welcome to episode 12. In this episode, we'll be talking about sales. Not from a sales expert perspective, because there are plenty of sales podcasts out there that you can listen to if that's what you're looking for. And we would seriously muddle it up and probably provide you with bad sales advice if we tried to do that. But we're sharing from the perspective of two non-salesy humans who rely on selling their services to support their family. It's pretty scary stuff.
Wildly terrifying.
Yes. But we're also sharing from the perspective of being sold to. Because we've recently made a pretty big purchase for our family and we've been through an interesting sales process ourselves. And we also purchased a few big things for our businesses in the last few years. So I reckon this will be useful for you if you'd like to take a look at your own sales processes from a buyer's perspective and maybe get some ideas for what to do and what not to do. Or even just find out what works to get buyers like us over the line. We have stories. So I am actually super interested in sales. I find it really fascinating to watch and be part of someone else's sales process because I want to understand what's happening and where things go right and wrong. And, you know, that makes sense as a copywriter. I am essentially a salesperson, but with the written word, even though it doesn't really feel like I'm a salesperson sometimes, I am. But it wasn't always this way. So I used to be pretty anti-sales just a few years ago, probably back when I was working as a marketing manager in a busy sales office. Lovely people, but it wasn't really my vibe. So there was sales calls, prospect lists, KPIs, contracts, follow-ups. But actually probably the thing I hated most was the open plan office space. That really did not work for my personality type. I'm all about having my own space. But anyway, after that job, I went straight into working for myself, which meant that I had to become comfortable with sales and selling myself very quickly. So as part of that, I did a lot of reading. I wrote a lot of notes, especially for calls with prospects, did a lot of meetings, and I gradually got more and more comfortable with selling. What I've realized is that selling is not about getting someone to do what you want them to do, strangely enough. But in the beginning, you're so desperate for people to say yes, and they can tell, and it makes the sales process that much more needy and awkward, I find anyway. And selling is actually about finding out what someone needs, recommending a solution and pricing it up. And then if you're a fit, you leave them with the information they need to make a decision and, you know, give them the opportunity to ask any questions. So you really have to become detached emotionally. In fact, I actually, like my process for this is that I expect every prospect to say no. And it's not that I'm negative. I'm actually a really positive person. But I really have no expectations that anyone will sign up with me until the proposal is accepted. And even then, until I have the first payment in the bank, I'm still like, it's not happening. So yeah, this was a bit of a ramble, but what I really mean to say is that the way I think about sales has changed a lot. And I think it's had a huge impact on outcomes. I've really increased my prices significantly over the years. And yet I think my acceptance rates have actually gone up. Which is quite strange when you think about it. I feel like over the last few months, at least 75% of my proposals have been accepted. It could be more or less because I haven't looked at my numbers exactly. But usually if over 50% of people are saying yes, I feel like that means I'm too cheap. And that may still be the case. But I suspect it's also because I'm making the process really smooth and I'm taking all that pressure off the clients when they make their decisions. So, you know, I try to make it as unsalesy as possible for them and just respect that they'll make the right call for their business. It's pretty much, that's the principle of it. Really simple. What's interesting about that is that it's so different to how so many people sell. I don't go looking for sales techniques to try and persuade people and get them across the line, at least during my sales process when I call people and things like that. Sometimes I look at copywriting techniques, which is handy, but again, I often don't really think about them as I'm writing. It just sort of comes naturally when you just think about what people are looking for and how you can get them to that end point. But anyway, this is pretty different to some people I find, which might mean this is a good time to talk about our recent experience of buying a new car. So I've been doing a lot of talking, which means it's time for me to shut up and let Stu tell some stories.
Car salesmen have a bit of a reputation. So I think you can kind of see where this is going. But let's start the story. So back in October, our only car, it just suddenly decided to die. I kind of had a feeling it was happening.
You'd been having that feeling for the last, since we bought it, I think.
Hey, don't be silly. it had been getting to a point where, you know, if something broke, it would cost more than the value of the car to fix it. So we thought we may as well buy a new car. Plus, we did need to upsize because, you know, two children, lots of things. Things were getting squishy in a little sedan. So it was kind of an inconvenient time for the car to die, but the timing also felt right in a lot of ways because we had our 2-week holiday coming up and we really did need the extra space. So we borrowed my mother's car, which was very nice of her, and visited a few dealerships in Brisbane to look at some cars that we'd found online. So the first car dealership we visited, we tried out a particular car. The sales guy was like super busy, tried to make himself look really important. It was kind of annoying and difficult to get his attention, but eventually he came and opened the car up, let us take it for a drive, and it was fine. The seats were leather, which Ange doesn't like because apparently they're sticky, and it was black.
I'm a really sweaty person, just to be honest.
Whoa, TMI.
I stick to leather. It's not nice.
the car was also black, which isn't very nice in the hot Brisbane climate. It wasn't a total deal breaker, but the car was in good condition and it was a good price. Anyway, before we moved on, they asked about what other cars we were looking at. So we told them, honestly, that we were basically looking at the exact same car, model, year and everything, but it was white and it was a diesel car. So he kind of gave us a funny look and, you know, got us to come inside and speak to the other wonderful salespeople. This particular dealership, according to them, they don't like diesel cars and they don't like this particular diesel car because apparently it has problems. One particular problem with the DPF, which can need to get replaced, which is expensive. But hey, they used car salesmen.
I learned a lot about diesel. I had no idea.
Yeah, me too.
Something about diesel particles in the atmosphere. I don't know. It was weird.
Laws that were passed that, you know, you have to get a thing on all cars now so that it filters out the bad things so that the ozone layer doesn't die. And
super smart move by the Australian government. Didn't really work too well on a lot of vehicles. Anyway.
So, we're a little bit suspicious because, hey, used car salesman. It obviously was in their best interests for us to buy their car. But we smiled and nodded and thanked them and went on our way. So we had an appointment with another dealership, so we went there to look at that car. And on our way, we did a bit of research, and yes, there were reports of issues with that car, with that particular component. So we were kind of feeling like, maybe we just shouldn't bother even looking at it, but hey, we'll go and have a look at it. So we came up and looked at the car. Immediately, it looked a lot nicer. It was white. I know it's... Some people find that boring, but we quite like it.
Pretty much all of our cars have been white. It's just our thing.
Yeah.
And in Australia, it's very practical.
The interior was nicer, stuff like that. So the dealer offered for us to take it for a drive, but we sort of said to him, hey, look, we've heard about the DPF issues with the cars. What do you think? He was just kind of, looked defeated almost, I'd say. Like, oh, right, yes. So he acknowledged our concerns. And he said that that was mainly to do with the older models of this car and that the newer ones hadn't really had any issues. But he asked us if we still wanted to take it for a drive. So we thought, sure, why not? We're here. So we did take it for a drive and it was actually quite nice. It was nicer than the other one we drove. It felt better. The seats were comfy. The interior was nicer. And it just kind of felt right. We're not really hipty-dipty people, but it just felt right.
The seats didn't make me stick to them, so that was a plus. Me.
You know, people pay more for leather. You realize that? Anyway.
Well, they're just silly. So just to give you the kind of headspace we're in, we really wanted to make a decision quickly because we didn't have a car. We've only, since, you know, we first got married, we've only ever had one car. And, you know, neither of us commute to work, so that's practical for us. But because we only had one car, our only car was not drivable. And we really wanted to take our car home today or tomorrow if possible. So what we did was we left with all the info in a pack. We headed across the road to talk over lunch. And we very quickly decided to get the diesel car. despite all the things that we heard, our research reassured us and we liked how it drove. So at this point, Stu is umming and ahhing over everything, as he does.
Look, someone's got to arm and ah.
I'd already decided. So I'm like a person of action. No, I was like, we need to act.
I don't think I really got a choice in the end, but that's all right.
Sitting on a fence hurts my bottom. So I'm all in. So then we just started to talk about finance. So we're like, oh, we could stretch our budget enough to pay outright, but do we get finance? And you know, it sounded like the process might be slowed down a bit if we went through finance, and we wanted that car ASAP. So we called the dealership, we say we're in, yay. We put down the deposit, just bank transfer on our mobile phone, very convenient. And then we headed into our bank to get a check made up for the full amount. So we were like racing there to get in before close of business because we really wanted that car. So just after we got there, after we got back to the dealership, we found out that the admin people go home at like 2 p.m. What's up with that? So that means we can't do all the registration transfer today, which was unlike what they promised. Still, we're excited. We'll get our car tomorrow, right? Saturday? Yeah. Dealerships are open on Saturdays. And then we can get back into normal life and do daycare drop-offs on Monday and all that jazz, hopefully. So meanwhile, we have to have a chat to this chick who gets invited over.
But not introduced really at all.
Yeah.
The sales guy kind of stands up and walks away and this rando lady, all dolled up, walks over.
Like, I'm pretty sure they said, she'll run you through how it all works or something like that. It was really vague.
So she strolls on over with a big smile, asking us questions about our family and our kids and what we've got going on in life. I really didn't have any interest in talking to this silly woman about my children or my life. We came to buy a car.
I'm a bit more friendly than you, so I responded to her questions.
So Ange talks to try and be friendly and answer her questions. And we're sitting there kind of going, okay, where is this going? Sales tactic alert. She's finding common ground and pretending to be interested in us. But, I mean, it was very clear from her face she had no interest in us. It was a Friday afternoon, after all.
Anyway, from her questions, she had a lead-in. She found out about a holiday and our kids, and she's like, oh, kids in a hot car, a long trip. And then she says something like, well, you'll be really interested in this then.
And then she proceeds to say, we like to do this to all of our vehicles before they leave.
Sales tactic alert. So I've actually heard this one talked about before. Make it sound like everyone gets the thing because you want to be like everyone. And in fact, make it sound compulsory, like they'll hold your car hostage if you don't do it. Dun, dun, dun.
And then she talked 15 minutes nonstop about paint protection and window tinting.
If you've bought cars before, you're probably like, oh, yeah, I know this. But this was like the first time we've ever experienced this.
Well, it's because we've never bought a near new car before.
Yeah, the last one was pretty old.
Yeah. Well, it was like 5 years old. Yeah. Anyway. So she kind of made it seem like this was, covered by what we paid for some reason, which doesn't make any sense at all. So as she continued, it became more obvious that she was trying to sell us something and she was trying really hard to sell it. So eventually we got to the point where we're like, yeah, how much is this? I think I said that.
Yeah, probably.
I very abruptly stopped the conversation and said, how much?
You probably noticed that Stu is not the patient one in this relationship.
Very impatient. It was the afternoon. We were tired from a day of looking at cars.
I was thinking it, but I wasn't going to say it. But yeah, pricing is a major factor, right? You know, you don't want to take up any of your brain power, even thinking of a product or service that's not in your budget. And remember, we just made out a check with nearly all of our savings that we'd made over the last few months to pay for this car outright. And we were feeling good about that. We were feeling proud and a little bit poor. We just wanted to drive our new car home. So finally, she brings out the prices. And that's thousands of dollars. Ha. Yeah, no. And there's some stupid package deal as well, where it's basically tricking you into thinking you're getting a good price because window tinting is almost nothing if you get paint protection, blah, blah, blah. So another sales tactic alert there. Make it sound like a deal you can't say no to. Except we did. Oh, and by the way, you have to decide today. It's got to be today.
It has to be right now.
Because it's going to go through with all the paperwork, of course. Sales tactic alert again. Add time pressure. Especially artificial time pressure.
And then she just says, so which one would you like?
Again, sales tactic alert, make the options between A, B, or C instead of yes or no. And actually, this one's a pretty good one to use in copywriting. It's not that evil, but, you know, it is a sales tactic, so I thought we'd mention it.
Like when compounded with all the other sales tactics, it's a bit dirty.
It is. It's just too much.
But pick one. Car salesman, so what do you expect?
It's true.
So we said, well, we're going to talk about it because we make financial decisions together and not with some lady looking at us.
Oh, my goodness.
From across the table. So then, you know, we have a talk to each other and have a bit of a laugh and I get a bit angry again, you know.
A bit. He was raging.
We wasted like 30 minutes of our time.
So anyway, we're like, what is this? Like, there's no way that we're getting this. It's so expensive. We don't need it. And yes, she's super angry. So we talk politely amongst ourselves, sort of. And then she finally comes back. So we're like, no, thank you. We've decided not to get it for now. And then she's like, oh, why? And, you know, it's really funny. She's kind of acting as if no one ever says no to her. But, you know, we answered honestly. We're like, well, we haven't budgeted for anything extra over the drive away, no more to pay price. We've just paid for everything up front and we don't want to add any other costs right now. And also we don't feel like we need those services. You know, it's not a priority for us. Like, seriously, chipped paint is not a big deal. Like, we buy our cars for practical reasons, not to look pretty. And also, we've lived without tinted windows our whole lives, so pretty sure we can survive a bit longer. And, you know, I'm sure much worse things are going to happen to our car with our kids in it anyway.
Yeah. But then suddenly all of the alternatives come out. So remember how she said we had to decide on the spot? Well, they could do up a payment plan for us and we could wait till Monday and have a think about it. They just want to make sure that the car is all protected and covered before it leaves.
And at this point, I'm like, hang on. We're getting the car tomorrow, aren't we? Saturday, not Monday. Anyway, that was interesting. But we're like, no, thank you. Oh, and side note, we did our own research later that night. And it turns out dealership prices for these services are massively inflated. I'm sure you're not surprised by that.
If you've ever bought a new car, you'll probably know that.
So. We ended up organizing a lovely mobile glass tinter to come to our place and sort out the tinting a couple of weeks later. And it was much cheaper and the service was actually great. Yeah, and again, we don't really care about paint protection, but, you know, it is much cheaper to get it done separately. So, yep, side note over. She finally gave up. Yay, finally. And she handed us back to the original car dealer, who then informs us that the admin people have gone home and won't be able to get registration transferred until Monday. So we'll have to wait until then. Even though we were really clear about our expectations and they could have told us that earlier. There's another sales tactic for you. Keep the truth from your prospect if it might add friction to the purchase process. After you've got their money and they've said yes, there's not as much that you can do about it. Ooh, that's a bit evil. So now that we've got that out of the way, our big story, hope you found it amusing. We're a bit of a noob with purchasing cars, clearly, but we should have a little bit more time to talk about some other sales experiences. Maybe some more positive ones where we've chosen to buy a product or service. So most of the stuff that I've bought just by knowing what I need or what I think I need, I just buy it after doing some reading online. So maybe I look at a sales page, I do some Googling, read reviews, I talk to friends and colleagues to find out about their experiences and yeah, just build trust with the seller. So basically gather info, make a decision, buy. That's my normal sales process. I don't know, well, at least as a buyer. And for us, like as a business and freelancers, we actually buy a lot of small stuff all the time. So we've got subscriptions, we've got lifetime deals, SaaS products, sometimes computer gear, but we've also bought some memberships and courses. And for me, pretty much all my best experiences with sales involve landing pages that really address the problems, benefits, features, and inclusions. And most importantly, they're really transparent about the pricing because I like to decide what I'm going to do without any pressure, without someone on a call with me and things like that. So I've actually been in a more high-pressured selling environment for an online program before, and it was so uncomfortable. Not a great experience. I just kept wanting to get to the point, like, you know, tell me what's included, show me the price. I don't want to waste my time or the salesperson's time, you know, if I respect them, obviously respect their time as well. And if I can't buy, if it's not right for me, I just don't want to waste that time. So very recently I looked at two similarly priced 4 to 6 month memberships or masterminds. All the info was there, including inclusions, testimonials, and pricing. And I was able to think about it really carefully and make a decision. I decided not to buy, not because those programs weren't good. The people running them were all quite brilliant in their fields, but it's because I couldn't see myself committing enough to get an ROI. If the price was a lot lower, the risk would have been a lot lower, and I might have picked one of them. And in fact, I'd already picked a program that I'll sign up for early this year. It's a lower monthly cost, but it's with someone who I've gotten to know online over the last few years. And more recently, we've chatted personally about things, and I've read his book, things like that. And I just know that he and I see things really similarly, only he's much further ahead in business. So it seems like a great opportunity. I have all the info I need to invest. If the program was more costly, I might need more proof, more inclusions, more details. But for the price, it's right. So anyway, that was my little positive sales experience story. So over to Stu.
I did recently buy a membership to a kind of like a tutorial website for sort of web design and development. It's this bloke he's quite popular in the community, and he makes a lot of tutorials for designers and developers to help them with a specific sort of theme development platform. He's a friendly guy. He doesn't really sell very hard. But the main thing that convinced me was he did have a bunch of free stuff available to view, so you could kind of get an idea of the content that he made and how he structured it. But also just the raving community online. There was always really positive things to say about it and how much it helped them. And also he did have a lifetime deal on it, which was ending. It was coming towards the end. This was a few months ago, actually, and I decided not to get it. And then after I didn't get it, I regretted it and signed up for his monthly membership, which was helpful. But then he decided to bring out another lifetime deal at Black Friday. It cost more, but I jumped on that because everyone, again, was raving about it. And yeah, he's really, I guess what's good about him is he delivers. He's really active in the community, and he delivered more than I actually expected in terms of sort of, I guess, the after purchase care. So to sum up, I guess the main things that convinced me to purchase was the fact that he was so active in the community, and he helped a lot of people, not only paid people, but just randoms. He spent a lot of his own time helping them, which was a good sign. The free access that he had to some of the content on his website and the quality of that. And then once I did sign up, it basically confirmed all of my suspicions about the quality of it. Oh, and also the reviews from everyone in the community about the subscription too.
I also, whilst you were talking, I also thought about another thing that I bought recently, another fairly big purchase. Because, you know, I think it's a lot easier to buy little things. You don't really think about it too much. But when it gets into the hundreds or thousands of dollars, you need a bit more of a process to be convinced. And I recently invested in some SEO tools. So I've had a paid SEO tool for more than a year now. And it's been great. But I actually wanted something a bit more powerful, a better interface, more features. And I've been looking at all the standard ones, you know, Ahrefs and SEMrush, and I was mostly comparing them. But then another one came across my radar, which was Mangools. Hopefully I'm saying that right. And I ended up going with that one. And there were a few things that convinced me. So first of all, the price point was probably a little bit better than those two other tools, which are about the same price. It seems to have a simpler user interface. So I have a trial or a free version of SEMrush with limited features, but just the interface confuses me. I know the basics. I could get the hang of it if I committed some time, but I just don't really like using it at the moment. And I probably will come back to it in the future, but for now, it doesn't, like, I don't need all the features. I mainly need keyword research stuff. I need that to be really good as a copywriter. And I also like to analyze the site and things like that. So Mangools had those exact tools, and it had free trial versions as well, which were really good. And yeah, they also had a limited time offer at the time that I was signing up. So that helped me make a quick decision, which I usually would do anyway. But, you know, it was just another little factor, another little sales tactic in there that helped me get over the line. Another thing was I did a lot of reading about reviews. There's so many blogs out there that talk about SEO tools. It's crazy, a bit overwhelming. But yeah, there were lots of positive reviews about Mingles, and people that I follow on Twitter have mentioned it. They use it and they like it. And yeah, that was enough to get me over the line. Okay, so let's wrap things up. Key takeaway, what does all this mean? All these little stories and things. What does it mean for sales tips and tactics for today? So I think that the new way of selling that works for people like us is to facilitate the sale. Don't push it. And that means presenting the right information at the right time, and then taking a step back while still being available for questions and things like that. Be transparent, be trustworthy, build long-term relationships, have a strong brand. If you do all those things, your sales will happen smoothly. You don't have to stress about sales tactics if you just focus on creating a really smooth, helpful process for people, which is a good thing. And yeah, hopefully you'll get more of the right people inquiring. People won't waste your time because they'll self-disqualify if all the information they need is there to make a decision. And as a result, you'll convert more of your inquiries into paying customers.
All right, so the next episode will be on the worstest website crimes, which should be a fun one.
Dun, dun, dun.
Tune in next week.
We'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Digital Brew with Ange and Stu.
Make sure you head over to thedigitalbrew.com for more episodes, detailed show notes, resources, and our newsletter.
And if you feel like this episode has helped you make your business more awesome, pop us a review.
We'll catch you next time.